Alrighty. G'day to everyone joining into the show. This is the Tripod Live with Clarkie and Winnie. We're here with you for the next 45 minutes to recap all the action from round five of the NRL. The Panthers are back. The Tigers are in big trouble. We had our first draw since 2020, Winnie. It was another fantastic round. But we know what everyone's here to see. That is the recap of our best bets. So let's jump into a little bit of accountability, if you don't mind.
Yeah, what an incredible round we just witnessed, Clarkie, and I'm happy to sit here with a smile on my face after enjoying some sensational finishes, some thrilling footy, including the final kick of the final game where we won a best bet, and I'm pleased to say swept our best bets this week, 2-0, and that late try by Adokar in the corner also secured the mixed matchup as well. We didn't hit the same gamer. Boy, we did have a good run for our money at over 10-1 odds. And no try by Karaz tonight, so you're back to dead square even after five games with your try scorer tips. But that's still okay. We're in really healthy profit on best bets and mixed matchups. And can't wait to talk about what we've just witnessed over round five.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, my apologies for the Karaz guys. It is my rookie season, so we'll start with that. But if you want, Winnie, do you want to jump into the Thursday night recap?
Yep, let's rewind. Feels like so long ago, but let's talk about the opener.
It does. This was a crazy round. Thursday night, guys, the Roosters defeated the Parramatta Eels. It was 28-20. My MVP was Daniel Tupou. I thought Luke Keary was unreal also. The scoreline in this one, Winnie, I didn't think this was as close as the scoreline reflected. Did you see it that way as well?
Yeah, it looked early, especially early. It looked like the Roosters could blow the Eels away. And again, that's one of the virtues of coming off a bye. The Roosters certainly looked fit and looked sharp. And Parramatta did incredibly well to scramble and keep the first half as close as they did for the main part. I mean, with just a few minutes to go in the half, it was only 6-2 to the Roosters. And the Eels had survived sin binning, where, of course, the hit on Teddy ended Teddy's night, and now he's got the stand down. But, you know, you talk about how big a challenge can be. Butcher was ruled to drop the ball and a play the ball about 30 out from the Eels' line with just a few minutes to go. They overturned that, and the Eels score that set. And also, the backbreaker was the try the Eels got on the stroke at halftime, which I thought really illustrated how fast Brandon Smith can get out of dummy half, as well as all the other assets that he's got. And I think even 10-2 to Parramatta, they would have been happy with that considering all they'd absorbed. And as I said before, like you're not facing Teddy in the second half. 16-2, it just was probably a bridge too far. And although the Eels did score first at the halftime, had to be more risky second half, you know, running it on fifth tackle. And that is how they scored a try. Ultimately, the Roosters kept them at arm's length.
Yeah, the interesting thing one here, for the Eels was without Junior Paulo, I thought their depth was already going to be tested. He's so important to what they do in the middle there. Once they had the two sin bins, I kind of saw the Roosters running away late with this one and putting a big scoreline on. But to the Eels' credit, if there is a positive to take from this one, they did score two tries in the last 5 minutes without their co-captain and with two sin bins. So I thought that was very impressive for the Eels there. I like how the Roosters played through the middle. I thought they were really deliberate with Junior Paulo missing, and they did seem to intentionally play through the middle. And it's always a great tactic. We've got Brandon Smith playing behind Jared Waria-Hargraves and other forwards there. But for the stats, actually, there was only a slight increase on post-contact meters for the Roosters. That surprised me a lot. I felt like they were really getting that momentum through the middle, but the stats didn't really indicate too much to do with that. The Eels only missed 27 tackles as well, Winnie. Now, I don't know how you remember this one, but I seem to remember the Eels being a hell of a lot more tackles, but I remember their scramble was awesome. To me, it sort of seemed like someone would miss the tackle, but they would scramble on their goal line and make up for it. So to only see 27 missed did surprise me a little bit. For the Eels, look, they don't look at that side. They've got four losses this year, and it's an average of 5 points. One of those lost by 8 points. The others was four points there. So the Eels don't look a bad side, but I just have to wonder, Winnie, it's a long season. Have you seen enough from the Eels to still think they're a finals-bound side, or are you starting to get a little bit worried?
When you saw what they were capable of against the Panthers, then they are a top eight side. Like, you couldn't fluke a performance like that, and it was just hard to back up against. And arguably, the Roosters on their best day The second best team in the competition. I know that there's some Broncos fans that might argue with that, but when the whips are cracking, I certainly put all those kind of teams up there, Penrith, Roosters and Broncos. And, you know, the Eels had to play a couple of those back to back. And as we've said multiple times, where the opponent was off a bye. So no, I wouldn't write the Eels off from where they looked a couple of weeks ago. They'd probably take 1-4 and it's a long season. It's 27 rounds.
I agree, man. It's a long season. And as soon as they stop playing these teams coming off the byes, certainly the Eels are a side that, you know, I think they'll be very strong in the back end of this season. We move to the Friday night's PM game. The Panthers absolutely gave it to the Canberra Raiders, 53-12. My MVP was Nathan Cleary, but I mean, it was kind of an achy pick because they all starred in this one. A genuine pumping here. I think this is the first like genuine pumping of the season. Lots of question marks over the Raiders, but the Panthers, they look like they're back, don't they, Winnie?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's why I still would say that they're the best. They're the benchmark. We will get to Brisbane soon enough. Look, we should have been on Penrith for a best bet here. We laid out all the reasons on Wednesday why we thought they'd win big and then just shied away from it because it had moved from 8.5 to 12.5. In fact, on game day, it was only 11.5, so maybe it came in a point because Liam Martin wasn't going to be available again. I went into it certainly just hoping the Raiders could make a good game of it. And I always, if I don't give out a bet, I want to be wrong. So I want the Raiders to prove me wrong. But it was Penrith getting in front early, Taruva the first two tries, and one of them was a crazy try, fifth tackle play with 20-plus passes by the Panthers, just showing what can happen when you keep the ball alive. And I thought, oh, here we go. But to the Canberra's credit, we knew they didn't have a lot of points in them and they looked to struggle and they had a bit of territory on the Panthers' line. They couldn't seem to crack them. But game looked like it could turn on a sin binning. Crichton sent for just repeat infringements in the red zone. And the Raiders did score off a Wolford rubber in behind to Whitehead. And not only was it 12-6 at that point, but they actually made a clean line break and a kick in behind gave an opportunity for Fogarty to make it 12-all. All he had to do was get the ball down, but credit for quite an amazing cover tackle by Crichton that denied him. And instead of 12-all, it ends up being 13-6 to the Panthers at halftime because, of course, Cleary slots a field goal right at the end. And, I mean, you tell me, Clarkie, did Canberra even come out after the break? I have a funny stat for you. Going into this game, the only team out of 17 in the competition that was yet to score 20 points in the first month was the Panthers. Well, they became the first team in the competition to score 50. They were in an absolute mood. And Salmon with the exclamation point in the weak gutted dog cup. And you could read his lips. He said as much too.
You could certainly read his lips there. That was a nice moment for him. Ivan Cleary said he thought it was a good bit of karma for him. The field goal, they are becoming more and more common this year, especially around the halftime mark. A lot of players, it was nice to see Cleary sort of step up and in those moments, you can always trust him to get it done. We'll start with my prediction here in this game. I said the Raiders would not score more than one try. I was wrong there. They did manage to score the two, which puts them on 12. Still short of their season average, which was around 20 up until that point. But I will say the only thing that stopped the Panthers from scoring more and potentially getting into the 60s was the James Fisher-Harris injury. Because even without him, the Penrith Panthers tore up the middle, running an extra 800 running meters. That's the biggest discrepancy I think I've ever seen in the NRL. 800 meters difference between two sides. And you can only imagine if James Fisher-Harris was there, how much worse that stat could have looked for the Raiders there. The Panthers open up their attack more than we've seen so far this year. And I think the stat you said sort of paints that picture as well, where it did lead to a few more errors in the first 20 minutes, but they're more than classy enough to sort of know that, hey, we'll make a few errors, we'll find our groove and we'll run over the top of them. It's exactly what they did. I don't really have too much to say for the Raiders here, and I'm not sure what they sort of take from this game. I think they sort of just have to move on from this as quickly as they can. I just can't think of too many positives for the Raiders in this one. They struggled throughout. The scoreline really sums up how poor they were. And I've got a few more negative notes here, but I won't say that for the Raiders. I'll just say the 51 missed tackles and the completion rate of 67%, they're two stats you can improve when you play your best footy. So there's something too easy improvements there for the Raiders in future weeks. Friday night, the blockbuster time line of 7:50 on the Friday, we had the Melbourne Storm defeating the South Sydney Rabbitohs 18 to 10 points. My MVP was Josh King, special mention to Harry Grant. Both men had 50 plus tackles in the middle there. A little bit of a surprise result here, Winnie, but I guess this is what happens when you underestimate the Melbourne Storm, right?
That's right. Underestimate them at your peril, I said on Wednesday, even though I tipped the Bunnies, I think, as did you, as did most people. And going back to positives for the Raiders, one positive, you don't have to play Penrith every week, luckily for Sticky's men. One negative for me, this was the last weekend of some slightly earlier kickoffs for those of us who are not in the daylight savings time zone. I always really enjoy early kickoff times, especially Friday when it's 5 p.m. local. And you said 7:50 that was. Well, that was 6:50 for Queenslanders. But we're all on the same time. And that just reminds me that that is going to update the starting time of the tripod for people who've been in the daylight savings time zones, whether that is New South Wales, Victoria, New Zealand. The pod's going to be an hour earlier for you now. So we're keeping it the same time for me because I'm doing it as early as I can with other commitments. And Clarkie's going to be an hour earlier in his time zone and an hour earlier for everyone south of the border of Queensland. And for the men south of the border of New South Wales, they came in and got the victory at Accor. Another game where Souths are just forced to chase it, not starting fast enough. I should also refer to the same game multi we had, which was 10 to 1 odds, either team to win 1 to 12. We got that part right, but we needed Keon Coloma Tungi to score a try. And if you listen to the press conferences, and I got a few interesting nuggets this weekend, but they said, you know, where did this one go wrong, Andrew, to Andrew Demetrio? The first thing he says is, we missed opportunities. If Keon backs himself, he scores. And the thing people are going to know what I'm talking about was like, I don't know, 7 minutes to go, maybe less, and a short ball. And I think Coloma Tungi was guilty of not realizing that he was going to slip that tackle. He completely broke the tackle. So instead, he probably thought the defender was going to hold on to him and he was happy to fall forwards and offload. If he just kept charging towards the try line, we might hit a 10 to 1 on the back of the ones we've already hit. But wasn't to be, as close as it came. Won and lost in the blink of an eye. Now, my other observation in this game before I get to the Storm, Latrell, you said on Wednesday, he's kind of that a big game player. Like he can turn up when you really need him, but maybe, and we're never going to Latrell bash. I think when he's at his best, he's so good. He's so impossible to handle, but maybe that was a kind way of saying he's floated in and out of matches a little bit this year and he hasn't been as involved as you'd want him to be. And I felt like I know actually when I look back at the stats, he still had something like 8 or 9 tackle breaks. So that's probably a testament to how good he is, that even when it doesn't look like he did a lot, he still had stats that would be the envy of many other fullbacks. But, you know, this is a game where they needed a bit more from their key players. And I felt like Walker was giving them a lot, Damien Cook, but Latrell on the quiet side. Again, give credit to Melbourne's determination. Once they had that lead and certainly through the second half, Souths were on their line for a lot of it and camped there and throwing a lot at Melbourne. And the cover tackles, the scramble, the determination to defend was back to the old Melbourne Storm ways. And Bellamy talked about building their team around their defense. And when you think about who's out for Melbourne, are multiple rep players that will rejoin this season, it's a reminder you definitely should not write them off.
And I feel the same way about the Melbourne Storm. I just feel if they can stick in the top eight for these early rounds until they get their Pappenhausen, Hughes, et cetera, back. And when they're back to full strength, then they're going to factor that for certainly the top eight. I think we'll start with the Latrell call because, I have to fess up. I really saw him having a big game here. Friday night, home stadium for him. And it just didn't really happen. I've got the stats here. He had one try assist. Supposedly, he had 21 runs, the second most of any Rabbitoh player, only behind Tom Burgess, and that shocks me. I can't believe that stat, if I'm being honest. They've got him down for 172 meters, one line break assist, and 9 tackle breaks. I had a note here. I said I was way off the mark, and that's how I felt. And then I checked the stats, and I was like, well, maybe I wasn't so far off the mark. I mean, it's not a horrible game, but it just didn't seem that he had any impact on that game. Certainly not the impact that we know he's capable of, right? And Jason Demetrio noted as much also in the post-game press conference. He said, we need a bit more out of Latrell. And I think he's perfectly correct in saying that. The Rabbitohs tried to fly out of the blocks here and tried to get on top really early with fast movement plays. And I don't think that's the right game plan against a resilient Melbourne Storm side that we've seen over the past decade. You currently can't catch them out too many times. In saying that, though, the Storm did miss 52 tackles, which is more than double in what the Bunnies missed. But I go back to my opening comment about their resilience, sort of similar to the Eels game on their goal line. They'd miss the first tackle, but they'd all scramble and make it up to each other and ensure that the Bunnies weren't able to get over too many times. I think ultimately the Bunnies will look back at their last 3 weeks with disappointment. Now, I know there's a field goal victory in amongst those last 3 weeks over Manly, but they're just nowhere near their best. I keep tipping them thinking they're going to, you know, it's suddenly going to click and Luttrell's going to find Cody's going to find Luttrell at the back rather, and Luttrell's going to break these tackles and get the offload and they're going to be back to their best, and they're just not yet. They're not, and I know it's round five, so I'm not too concerned for them. I don't think their fans should be either. But when you look at their backline winning, it is hard to make too many excuses this side. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, so I do wonder about what's going on. And to me, the obvious answer is, well, there was a World Cup and it's pushed a lot of the key rep players' preparation back a bit because I'm sure that their clubs probably let them have a lighter off-season or pre-season because they don't want them to be burnt out towards the end of the year. So, you know, a couple of the members of that South's backline were obviously on that tour, and that's about the best excuse I can make for them. Like, once again, you can't win the competition in round five, you know, when there's still another 25 to go when you include finals. So definitely no need to panic. But it is something we need to consider because when we think of Souths in our head and when we tip them to win games like this, and I said I was close to making Souths the best bet, you know, in my mind, it's peak Luttrell. And then when you're watching it and he's not that involved, then Souths aren't quite the same team anymore.
No, they're not. You can certainly see a lot of comments rolling through here regarding Luttrell. Last one before we move Luttrell to the centres, rate it or hate it?
No, I wouldn't do that. Anything that bold just yet.
Mate, I completely agree, but you'd be surprised how many people have been calling for it this year. We move to the Saturday game. We've got the Manly Seagulls and the Newcastle Knights playing to a 32-point all draw. My MVP was Dom Young, 4 tries. Really impressive considering he wasn't meant to be playing this game. And I think between these two sides, although there's a draw, the Knights probably impressed me a little bit more. Special shout out to Jake Trbojevic, 100 plus running meters, 49 tackles. First draw since 2020. Winnie, how'd you see this one?
And some of those tackles by Trbojevic when no one else had any petrol left in the tank were just brutal. And boy, this was madness. This was a wild game. You know, when we previewed it, I said I don't really have too many strong opinions on the totals. But then in this particular game, I said I feel like there'll be plenty of points. The surprise to me, as much as anyone, was probably that the Knights could score over 30 in this one. You weren't shocked to see it coming from Manly. And early in this game, look like Manly might actually put on a towel up. I mean, you look at how easily Olakau'atu just strolled through the defensive line early, and then there was another try soon after, and it's 10-0 Manly. It looks like it's going to be a very long afternoon for Newcastle. But a sin bin, again, kind of turning the game. Olakau'atu himself was in the bin for 10. The Knights came alive, scored back-to-back tries, and then they actually had a man in the bin. Fitzgibbon was sent, but they still hung tough in that period. That was crucial. And in fact, the Knights scored while they were down a man. It was Dom Young scoring his first of 4. And then he got his second of 4 to actually give Newcastle the lead into the break. And then he scored a third in a row after the break, at which point Newcastle was leading 28-16. Now, from there, the Knights have got to win that. When you're up 12 against, you know, any NRL team in the competition, leading by 12 second half is going to be disappointed to let it slip. But this game has had so many twists and turns. Manly responds, 3 straight tries in 10 minutes. They hit the front. Then Newcastle thinks they've leveled it up with a shot to win, only for Bradman Best try to be ruled out by the bunker. For me, absolute BS. What are you doing? You know, that trying to find a minuscule reason that the ball kind of shifted in his hand. I thought we were being more lenient with attacking players and put downs, and they're really calling that a knock on when it's never going to be called a knock on anywhere on the field. And I thought that was Newcastle's last chance. But again, Olakau'atu in his mixed afternoon. He gave away a penalty in possession on the Knights line with only about 3 minutes to go. That led to a Newcastle's final attacking set and a fourth try by Dom Young, skying for a bomb with a minute to go, because he's a pure athlete and Manly couldn't handle him all day. And I don't know if you saw the press conference, Clarkie, but you got to give me a minute to just bag Adam O'Brien, as I do from time to time, because O'Brien has the nerve to say, we look like geniuses for putting Young in now. I'm thinking to myself, hang on a second. Dom Young played in this game because Heimel Hunt had a rib injury. You are not a genius for dropping Dom Young for the last 2 weeks. And if Dom Young didn't play in this game, they would have lost by two tries. And I'm not just saying that because of the math, like he scored four. There's games where wingers score two, three tries, and you kind of think any kind of winger might have finished those off. If you watch this game, it was one of the most incredible performances by a winger you're going to get. He was everywhere. He scored tries. No one else might have scored. He set up tries and incredible carries all day. And, I mean, Newcastle are insane if they choose any other tandem of wingers than Marzu and Young. But I don't get it why they dropped him to reserve grade. It obviously must be because he signed with the Roosters. So are they that petty that you're not going to use this kind of Ferrari that you've got, you know, in a back line that's not blowing teams off the park? Anyway, Newcastle gets lucky because a player had a rib injury. Young comes in, has an incredible game. That fourth try gave Miller the chance to kick it. It's another gripe I have, a chance to kick the winning goal. The Knights chop and change on who their goal kicker is. Hastings took the first one or two attempts, then swapped to Miller. Miller's not that great either. I don't know. I would have felt more confident had it been Hastings. Of course, it was windy. He missed the kick. They played 10 more minutes in extra time. Now, when you play 90 minutes and play to a draw, each team is going to rue opportunities and say they should have won. So I'm not going to go as far and say Knights should have won, because for sure Manly will look at their opportunities. It's funny too, because Manly ran into the breeze in the first period of extra time, and that probably played in their mind. I feel like they were on the fringe of field goal range, three straight sets, and didn't even take an attempt. And in fact, the final play of the first period was Manly tackled a meter short on the Knights line, where Croker went himself after a DCE break. And then the second period, when the Knights were actually running into the breeze, they had the better chances, including Hastings nearly kicked one from halfway, the final play of the game. But alas, it went short. And my other observations, I got a lot from this game, a lot to take away. But, you know, although Manly scored 32, I think they did miss Schuster. I think he was ruled out during the week, and had he been there, maybe that could have been the difference. But I will say the Knights are a legit team. You got Miller. He had some moments he'd want to forget out of this one, including that missed kick and what he was doing for that first try. But Manny gets involved. He has a ridiculous work rate. Like, he'll catch a kickoff for a dropout, and he's the smallest bloke in the field, and he's not even looking for someone to drop it off to. He just runs it himself. And then you look at the performances of the outside backs for the Knights. Like, Gagai still looks like a rep player. Best is having a great season. I mentioned the wingers. You had positive news from North America this week. Ponga, he did say, I'll be back soon, whether he just means physically or whether, but he did say positive news from the scan. So whether he rejoins this team, I'm feeling good about most improved call, although there's another strong candidate for that played today. But better let you get a word in. What did you take away from this one, Clarkie?
Mate, I've taken a lot away. You pretty much covered it all. That was an exemplar coverage there. Gagai, he looks great. I think there's a few options there. The Queensland Maroons center spots. Hammer's playing good. Tars is playing good. There's that as well. On Dom Young, I did see Mark Doyle saying that played horrible against Dolphins essentially and had to get dropped. I see that, but I also see a player that's more than classy and capable of coming back, like he's shown in this one. I certainly think if he had re-signed with the Knights on a five-year deal, they wouldn't have dropped him after that Dolphins game. He might be the best player in the NRL in attacking kick situation. I think it's probably between him, Xavier Coates, would you say? They're players that can really get up and under that. The bunker no try from Bradman Best, I agree. There actually was a rule interpretation change around that, where that should be a try now under that confirmed new rule change. And the sin bins, Winnie. I'm always interested in this stat. how many points has a sin bin worth? In previous years, I've tried to get that data from other people where someone gets sin binned in that half, how many points get scored after it with the workload everyone else has to make up. And there's been plenty this round. So it's certainly a stat we've got to get around and find a little bit more. My first point was the Lachlan Miller missed tackle on Homoli Olakau'atu. Now, people really had a go at Lachlan for this. I get it from an optics lens. It looks pretty bad. He didn't have an attempt, but even if he gave it his 120% best shot, he's not stopping him. He's not.
Well, he would have passed to if he needed to. And let's give benefit of the doubt, because you would say, oh, he just didn't want any of that smoke. But I think he got lost where he was on the field, lost his bearings. And I think the proof to that is what I said before about how brave he is everywhere else across the field and how he never shirks contact. You'd give him the benefit of the doubt that he wasn't doing it, you know, dare I say, Darius Boyd, and just not tackling a player because he wants his career to go a little bit longer.
NRL players are so tough. It's extremely rare that they intentionally don't, you know, make contact. It's what they're paid to do. I'd say it was just, you just lost his compass bearing a little bit there. I thought Manly's execution was probably a little bit off in this game. There were stages where they were poised to really go ahead and go on with it. And I think you could probably make the same argument for the Knights as well. But maybe I just expected a little bit more out of Manly this one. I certainly expected a lot more out of Homoli Olakau'atu after moving him into my predicted blue squad. A real rock and diamond afternoon. And if he doesn't give that last silly penalty, Knights don't get in a position for Dom Young to score his fourth. It was a needless penalty. It was really silly. More on Manly's execution. The golden point period for Daly Chiarovan, someone who I think if we go to all NRL players, he'd probably have the most halfbacks of anyone. I mean, just watching from TV, I thought there was three shots in a row where it was about 30 metres out and probably could have nailed it. Based on what I've seen from him in the past anyway, he refused all three. But ultimately, look, this was a high-scoring contest. Both sides up around 85%. The winner was the fans. This was a fun one to watch. But I do have one question before we move on to the next game. Who do you think out of these two sides walks away with more positives when they look back at this draw?
Oh, you have to say the Knights when they come in double-digit underdogs. I think they can build on this. You know, a draw, it always leaves you feeling pretty empty. But a point is still a point in the competition ladder. You know, it's almost like a tiebreaker. Or it takes out for and against because they're pretty rare draws. It might mean that anybody else they finish level with wins on, they would finish higher thanks to this. So you never know if it's a positive or negative till the very end. Does it end up costing you a spot or is it the difference getting you in? But considering expectations, a moral victory more so to the Knights, I'd suggest.
Yeah, I completely agree. They were underdogs. They had more outs. And for Manly, it's sort of 2 weeks in a row where they've been well within reaching distance. Of course, the Rabbitohs game last round as well, and just haven't walked away with the 2 points. You know, that's four competition points Manly could realistically have in the last fortnight. Instead, they only walk away with one. Next game on Saturday, the Dragons absolutely thumped the Dolphins 30-12. My MVP was their little halfback, Benny Hunt. I thought he was awesome. And big blocker Laurie in the middle. Thought he was great as well. I'm really fortunate for your side here, Winnie. And, you know, probably the first game where you look back as a Dolphins fan and are disappointed in the result. Your thoughts on this one?
Well, yeah, of course, I'm a Vins fan, but as I said, my number one pod is the tripod. So since this was our best bet, I was actually pretty pleased. And it's nice to win one without having to worry too much. Although the Dolphins scored first, the Dragons scored the next 28 points and had this one comfortably. And if you watch the press conference, Wayne Bennett said, anyone with footy knowledge could see that we've been up for a month and the Dragons have been the opposite. And you knew the Dragons would be a lot better this week. He basically went on to say, it's as if we've played a final series and last week was our grand final, which was some of the points we were making going into this one and why I had a best bet on the Dragons, because the Dolphins, as impressive as they've been, they've been as good as they can be, and the Dragons had so much improvement in them. And so Bennett basically said to your face, guys, if you tip the Dolphins, it's your own fault. Of course, it wasn't just the performance. I suppose losing Milf early hurt when they're already, you know, thin on their halves. But the biggest thing that I noticed in this game was just the Dragons looking like a new team. And I can't put my finger on one reason. it'd be easy to say, oh, Junior Amone or DeBellin, who both played their first games this year, were the difference. I thought they were just both, it's positive signs to have them back, but they were solid. And I just thought this team played with energy. Jack Bird looked really good. Hunt is always great when the Dragons win, but I had Laurie as well. And Tyrell Sloan is a real live wire at fullback. Plus, anytime you play Moses and Bai a bit less, you probably look better. So Little actually got the start this week and played more minutes, and that certainly helped too. And the Dragons won the game easy. I mean, you could kind of see the negativity in the Dolphins' performance when they're down 12-6 with 2 minutes to go in the half. I can't remember if there were that many sin bins this weekend. I can't remember if they were playing against 12 as well, but they got a penalty and they went for goal to cut the lead 12-8. I think that showed you that they just wanted to junk it up and shorten the game and hope that they could pinch it, because they couldn't really outplay the Dragons in this one.
Yeah, this is a game that was split. I went Dolphins, and it's been a tough round for me with more than one pick there. But my little brother did mess. He said, what's your best bet for this round? I sent him through your Dragons tip, because you'd almost convinced me on the pod that I need to change my mind. In the end, Jesse Brumwich's 300th, I thought that'd be a much bigger factor. Wasn't really in the end there. Tyrell Sloan, I mean, this stat really sums up how much of a live wire he is. At the 67th minute mark, he had 39 meters gained. He finished the game with 147, only 8 of those post-contact. So that's all, you know, open field play all of a sudden in a 13-minute period, where he really shown his brilliance and sort of what he's capable of there. For the Dolphins, I think this is where we really start to see my preseason prediction play out. I said they had a great first 17, but I did think they were light on for depth. And it's not that you ever want to see a side's depth tested, but it's the reality of rugby league, right? And with the first choice half of Fonos unavailable and now Milford unavailable, really, really tested. I mean, Cody Nikorima, he should come back, I believe. He'll partner Isaiah Cartola. But as soon as Milford went down, I'm not going to pretend Milford's a world beater and some superstar, but at that point, purely for his experience, I sort of knew this one was over for the Dolphins. Another week where the injury curse gets him, and I thought it's going to be really hard to get up from here. And it's not like Isaiah Katoa has the experience and the poise to sort of, you know, pull the troops in line and lead them around, nor should he 3 games into his career. So it was always going to be tough on the back of that. But for the Dragons here, this reminded me exactly the game against the Titans, where there was the pressure building on them, and all of a sudden they exploded. Now, Dragons fans, I'm going to cop it even worse if I get this one wrong again, but I think Martin will beat you guys next week, and I think the Raiders will the week after that, because that would be around the period they get Kotrick, Whiten, and Xavier Savage back. And I think this could be the theme of the Dragons' season, where they stack up a bunch of pressure on themselves and then explode and let it all out and have a great season, and struggle for that consistency again and sort of continuing in that loop. But realistically, the Dolphins, there's excuses in this one again. I do think Wayne Bennett is someone who will still get them turned around and get them competing, winning. I don't think it's all doom and gloom season over for them. They completed high enough, 85%. They didn't play horrible. They just sort of lacked that experience and class to sort of capitalize on the big moments. And for that reason, I think it was really unfortunate for Jesse Brumwich in his 300th NRL game. Just for big J Brumwich, I would have liked to see a little bit of a better result here in this game. But alas, we get our best bet on that one. And we move to the final game of Saturday, where the Brisbane Broncos hammered the West Tigers 46-12. My name was Reece Walsh, another electric fullback out the back. And I thought Payne Haas was excellent as well there in the middle. Tale of two sides in the winning. The Broncos moved to 5-0. The Tigers moved to 0-5. How'd you see this one?
Yeah, the Tigers looking pretty disconnected a little bit, maybe like your internet connection, or at least our connection this one. We apologize, guys. It's a little bit spotty. Hopefully you can still interpret what we're sharing with you. Is there any update? I've just got an important question. Is there any update on the Tigers' legal challenging of that result when they got robbed up in North Queensland last year? Because maybe, could they get the 2 points from that game? Could they get those 2 points this season? I don't know. I mean, think about it, how last year they made a massive deal, like they were going to legally challenge the result. Like, what would it have done? What a few months later, you're going to add 2 points to their ladder last year. Look, I hate to be cruel, but they're becoming a bit of a punchline of the NRL, and their coach isn't helping matters. Again, I got some funny nuggets out of these press conferences. Remember how last week when the Warriors beat the Bulldogs 16-14, and what did Serraldo say? Sean Johnson was the difference. Do you know what Shane said in his press conference last night? He said Adam Reynolds was the difference. Like, and I'm sorry to say that if you take Adam Reynolds out of this game, it wouldn't have been 12-all, Sheensy. I'm sorry to tell you. 1-17 was the difference, especially in the first half. Brisbane definitely remembered what the Tigers actually did in ambushing them at Suncorp last year. I thought Payne Haas was best on field and looked absolutely unstoppable. And all the outside backs for Brisbane are a threat, and Walsh brings them into the game. And I saw so many people, same game multis, who'll be telling you, you can't make Walsh man of the match when he didn't score a try, when everybody had him in their same gamer. So sorry about that, guys. That's sometimes how it goes when people are laying them on for everyone else. Look, I'm not going to talk much more about this game because the score pretty much summarizes it. Although, you know, West didn't completely capitulate. Second half was only 12-6 to Brisbane, so it could have been worse. But I have a solution to the Dolphins' halves woes. There was a comment that came through that Toby Sexton could be a consideration. Of course, he was your Titans halfback. So I'd be interested to hear what you think. This year, Clarkey's been demoted to reserve grade or Queensland Cup. But what about Luke Brooks? We've said it enough times that he just needs a fresh start. He needs a new change of scenery, right? This solution makes too much sense. Honestly, please take this idea. West Tigers, Dolphins, sign Luke Brooks for the rest of the year. They've got the money. They can pay a bit of the freight of that million a season that Brooksy is on. So therefore, it's a win for the Tigers to save some cash. Surely they'd love to do that. They don't need Brooks anymore. They're not going anywhere this year. And Luke Brooks actually does make sense for the Dolphins with O'Sullivan out long-term. Milford's, you know, form and fitness is patchy, and obviously now a hamstring injury and he's getting on. Katoa had an injury. He's very young. And I actually, tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Wayne Bennett could be that. If anyone can get the best footy out of Brooks, it could be someone like him, and he'd get to join a fresh, motivated team with fans that would actually appreciate him being there. I mean, am I wrong? That makes too much sense, doesn't it?
There are a few challenges there. Like, I think he's signed for if it's not till the end of this year for the, I think it might be till the end of this year for the Tigers, but the Dolphins aren't going to want to take him for longer than a year, right? So then the question is,
just do it for this year, like an audition.
Do you think Luke Brooks would want to move to Queensland, though, for a 1 year?
He should. He should want to play. That's like the only NRL club where I think, he might actually feel like people want him there. And it'd be an amazing opportunity playing under Bennett, I feel. Like, otherwise, he should just go and try and win the Man of Steel in the Super League at this point.
No, I hear you, Matt. I agree with you. I'm just looking at it from sort of a wider lens as well. Then I sort of think, how much would the Dolphins expect the Tigers to pay? And then how much does that get too much? Tigers are like, well, it's just worth us keeping it for the extra year. The problem with Luke Brooks is, and it's almost like you can't criticize him anymore because it's so overdone, but he's just always been overhyped. He's just never really been a good player. I know he won the Dally M Halfback of the Year in 2018, but I mean, I don't think he should have won that award. I think there were so many better halfbacks this year. It's just sort of how the Dally M it was structured at that point. And I remember high school when Luke Brooks was playing under 20s, people would genuinely come to school on Monday and we would talk at lunch about footy and they would say that he's going to be the next Andrew Johns. And so that's obviously not fair for any kid. But when I say overhyped, I'm not using that lightly. He was genuinely being compared to arguably the greatest halfback to ever play the game. Yes, onto the game. The Tigers become the first side in NRL history to lose their opening five games in two consecutive seasons. I think that's really disappointing for their fans who, although they hammered me all preseason and told me I know nothing about football because I said the Tigers would miss the eight, they had some new signings and they were really, really keen for something to change this year. And so far, it hasn't. for the Broncos, a big positive. They moved to 5-0. The last time they did that, they won the premiership in 1998. I think for the Tigers here, they seem to start this game and they want to play for completions. That was their goal. Let's get a kick. Let's play smart, sensible, conservative footy. Then all of a sudden, the Broncos scored twice. And then the Tigers caved in that scoreboard pressure, went away from completions, and started to play stupid and risk stuff that they didn't have to risk so early into a contest. And so I think for Tim Sheens, he really needs to be very deliberate about the game plan. We play consistent. We're going to finish our sets for 80 minutes, or we're going to play open, expansive football and bear the risk that we make some errors. I just don't see the Tigers winning many games when they chop and change in between that, especially during the contest. The Broncos in the end finished with 15 errors, and Payne Haas only played 47 minutes. My opinion is that was the only two factors that kept this score from being bigger, because the Broncos could have been in a position to really put them to the sword if their own error hadn't sort of held them up a little bit. But they finished the game with an extra 500 meters. Interesting stat here, Winnie. So the Broncos had 500 extra meters gained, but the post-contact meters for both sides were exactly the same, which is really, really strange to think the Tigers being the middle stats-wise in that game. I guess it goes to show we can't pay too much into this, because they also show the Broncos had a 1 second slower play the ball on average across the whole game, which doesn't sound like much, but 1 second does add up every single tackle. But the way I saw it, the Broncos just went through their middle like a hot knife to butter. Did you see it also?
Yeah, and the way I'm kind of interpreting those stats is then they'd slower play the balls and the same number of post contact, but 500 more gross meters, then their runs, they just were not met by the defensive line nearly as quickly. Yeah. So basically the Broncos' line speed had to be way better. So the Tigers were just going backwards all night, which does kind of demonstrate what we saw visually, which was the Tigers getting mauled by this Broncos forward pack, and then the outside backs and edge back rowers reaping the rewards.
I think you make good sense of those stats there, because I was actually struggling to sort of comprehend them at one stage there. But Sunday, today, two awesome games of NRL. Awesome games. The Warriors defeat the Cronulla Sharks 32-30. My MVP, well, need I say, Sean Johnson, two try assists, didn't miss a goal, penned a goal to win the game. I mean, let's save some time. What didn't he do? Nothing. Winnie, some people online and people during the coverage of this game were saying that this is the greatest New Zealand Warriors win ever. Based on what you saw today, do you disagree or agree with that?
Nothing else like comes to mind. I mean, best win ever, you probably have to put up their one or two wins over the Storm. They've had like a finals win or two where they've beaten the Storm. So that's like higher stakes. Obviously, they've made a couple of grand finals. So you could probably find wins along those campaigns. But if we're talking just a regular season game, they were dead set from betting perspective, 1,000 to 1 to win this, when they were down 20-0 after 20 minutes. Now, you called it Sharks versus Warriors, but part of this game was just Mulitalo versus the whole Warriors right edge, antagonizing each other. Mulitalo started it, but as you said, Sean Johnson finished it. And I thought my original note that I made was, man, the Sharks just look unstoppable. The Sharks were playing unbelievable. I mean, to give you an idea, if you didn't watch this, the Warriors were 100% on completions until about the 33rd minute, yet they'd already conceded 26 points. So the Sharkies were opening them up without even being handed any extra ball. They just could not be contained. They're running ridiculously hard and just spreading it out to these potent outside backs and just playing free-for-all footy. And it looked like they're going to do an absolute number on the Warriors. And you said it on Wednesday that the Warriors got a tight field goal win early last season and followed that up a week or two later, losing 70-10. That's the kind of score that was on the cards in this one. But as we have said, the Warriors are different this year. They withstood that early barrage. They got a couple of first half tries, but also really importantly, they withstood the sin binning of Niakura. Niokure, sorry. And he was sin bin in the final minute of the first half. So they had to come out with 12 and actually scored a try in that time due to a Mulatalo error. In fact, it was Sharks' errors that opened the door, but all the credit in the world to the Warriors for applying themselves, never giving up belief, never losing composure, leveling the scores at 30-all. They never hit the front in this game until there was 30 seconds to go. I must say the penalty that they did get was a bit dicey to me. I didn't really think it was a penalty, but, you know, it's touch and go, split-second call. Maybe if it wasn't a penalty, maybe there's a Moylan knock-on in there anyway. It's worth mentioning that while it started as a bright, sunny afternoon and people are seeing the score had 62 points, the heavens absolutely opened. The rain just came heavier and heavier, and by the end of the game, it was a dead-set monsoon. So it was a chaotic final 15 minutes, which included a sin bin back the other way for Nukin, binned for a hip drop. So that actually opened the door for the Warriors to get a dramatic victory. But then, of course, it wasn't over after Johnson did nail that penalty goal from 35 out because he was judged offside off the short restart, which gave Nico Hines a 40-meter sideline shot to level it. And just the big money man, or at least rumors are that Hines has signed a long-term deal or on the verge of one. Cronulla, he couldn't quite send this and give us some bonus football in this one. But nonetheless, what an incredible match and what an incredible win again by these Warriors. They are not the same team that we are used to.
No, they're not. And the weather was certainly an interesting one. As you said, start off as a beautiful sunny Sunday arvo, and by the end of it, you knew, well, you know why they call it the Bermuda Triangle, I suppose. If you just take away that score there right now and you say, who are you tipping, Sharks or Warriors? I'm going to tell you Sharks, right? And then if you tell me the Sharks are going to get a 20-point head start, who are you tipping? Like, it's so obvious, right? Based on what we know in the last how many years football's existed. But that was just so impressive for the Warriors. And absolutely, they have a new resilience about their side that they have not had at all in previous years. When the Sharks did jump out to that early lead, I sort of looked around and thought, okay, how much are they going to win by today? They're in a mood. Nico Hines is well and truly back. Unfortunately for the Warriors, no Tohu Harris. This is going to be a bit of a shellacking. And to their credit, they just did not go away. I do think there is an element of the Sharks beating themselves. I thought there was a lot of silly things they did in that game that they could have just avoided and maybe snuck home with a win. But the thing is, for the Sharks, even if they were to win that game, they couldn't have been happy with their performance. They were nowhere near their best today. And in the end, they got what they deserved, even though the Warriors were up against. But yeah, I go back to the resilience, courage, and composure of the Warriors to not freak out when they were down by 20, to not go away from their game plan, to not throw in the towel. These are things that Warriors teams of the past certainly have done. So full credit to them. The Niokore sin bin for a hip drop. I didn't agree with that at the time, and I still don't agree with it now. I was actually, as I was writing that note out on my agenda for this show, Finucane then got sin bin for a hip drop. And what a hip drop tackle actually is, where the weight of the defender is transferred onto the lower half below the hip of the player that's attacking. There's that weight transfer. It's an intentional drop of the weight, and it's on the lower limbs. And that's exactly what Finucane did. Not intentionally, but he did it. But for Niokore, I mean, he sort of got bumped off the tackle and then fell. There certainly was no transfer of weight, in my opinion, anyway. So if that had to cost the Warriors, I can certainly see why their fans would have been very, very upset. But yeah, in the end, Winnie, I have to say, I can see people talking about their win over the Melbourne Storm when they were eighth and the Storm were first. I'm not sure what year that was, but I can't remember that one. So I am going to throw this one up as the greatest Warriors win that I can remember in their history. The round closed out about an hour ago now in another crazy set of circumstances. The Bulldogs come from behind to defeat the Cowboys 15-14. My MVP was Jacob Preston. Matt Burton, another one that you can't really go past. But you look at a great round of footy, Winnie, and this is really the cherry on top, wasn't it?
Especially when we had a best bet and the mixed matchup at stake. and we needed the Bulldogs to score more points than the Dolphins. So we got that equation part half right. The Dolphins were never in it. I was annoyed that they did score a try out of nothing late, but that only brought their tally to 12. We just needed more than 12 points from the Bulldogs this afternoon to win the mixed matchup. Then again, that rain was carrying on in the Sydney game, and you're thinking it's no certainty. And they only had 6 points at halftime, and they were trailing 8-6. And I thought, it's not going to be one of these games, is it? And our best bet was Bulldogs plus 1.5. And it looked like we were going to lose a narrow one as well in a game where the Bulldogs actually did score more tries, but couldn't hit the conversions. But in the end, we get the win on all fronts with the mixed matchup and the best bet, thanks to a try, the final play of regulation. Adokar able to get the finish there. And I thought that comeback, because not only were the Bulldogs down 8-0 early, and another hip drop, Ockenball was sin-binned, and the Dogs had to withstand that, and they did to pull it to within a 2-point margin at halftime. But it was 14-6 to the Cowboys with under 20 minutes to go after Chester's try. And the Cowboys of last season wouldn't have given up that lead. Like, how few points did the Cowboys concede in any second halves? That was their trademark, that they just were unbreakable late in games, and they got stronger and took games away from teams. So you have to give a lot of credit to the Dogs, because if you actually watch this game, boy, they were just sustaining losses. And this started before kickoff, when Kikau got a concussion at training and then he's ruled out. So, okay, great. That's your best forward is out, and already I think Pangai Jr., you know, hasn't played a part this season. Luke Thompson was injured preseason. Fatala Mariner was out HIA very early in this game. Max King, someone commented there how brave. He had a really bad eye injury, holding an ice pack against his eye for half an hour, and then actually came back on late because they needed him in the game and, like, couldn't see out of one eye. I feel like I'm not, off the top of my head, there's one or two other injuries that the Dogs sustained along the way. So they were running out of troops quickly. But I thought the class of Marnie, knowing when to scoot, and obviously he had a key try assist that cut the deficit. And the other man, Matty Burton, like that blindside play that he runs, which ultimately gets him a repeat set, which leads to the game-tying try. And then then he goes early kick right at the end of the first period of extra time from in their own territory, and Adokar streaking down the sideline, and although they don't score, he backs it up and drills a sideline field goal for the win. I mean, you talk about famous victories and what a memorable one that was for the Warriors. I'd love to hear from Bulldogs fans in the chat. That's got to be up there with some of the greatest Bulldogs wins you've seen, certainly, you know, in the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, look, I think the Bulldogs fans will be very hype about that finish, and certainly you can never be upset with a win in the NRL. But I just can't discount what I saw for the first 75 minutes here. I'm sorry, Doggies fans, to go down a negative route, but I thought for the bulk of this, you kind of lacked a lot of anything in attack, really. And of course, now that there's the field goal and you've won this game, all that kind of goes out the window and fans will forget about it, and it won't be spoken about until another comes around. But my notes here were that, you know, after halftime, both sides completed well for the wet, but didn't have anything of significance in attack. And that's sort of been the concern I've had with the Bulldogs for a few weeks now. Certainly, I can see the injuries rolling through here. The amount of injuries the Bulldogs have make it very impressive from that respect. And I'm not going to take anything away from forward pack. They were absolutely exceptional, going down and having to make it up for missing troops, and also playing through injuries with others. You mentioned the eye injury to Max King. Schneider mentions the Jacob Preston injury there. So there was certainly an element of toughness in this game.
And I forgot Pele as well, broken arm. Another middle that was lost.
Yeah.
So thanks for those comments that are coming through, guys.
And the other person on that bench was Josh Reynolds, not a middle forward. You know, I just think that they're going to have to make the tough call soon. Is Flanagan going to be the halfback for this side, or are you going to take a long-term potential hit and a short-term win by just having Reynolds as your seven? Because I'm not sure how much Reynolds really offers from the bench there. I thought there was a few too many Chiefs out there, and the Bulldogs' attack was just side to side to side. There was nothing of significance getting thrown. And I know for a fact Bulldogs fans will disagree with me, but had they have not got the win here, I think they'd be saying the exact same things and be just as disappointed as I am, having tipped them. For the Cowboys, certainly not the same size as last year. I know it's super early. I do wonder whether they will sort of factor into that as a premiership threat. I still think they'll be a final size. I think they'll be nearabouts. But last year, I looked at the Cowboys as, all right, these guys could win the premiership. Not viewing them in the same light, although it is super early days in 2023. But look, with everything I've just said, the Dogs played with a ton of heart tonight and had some serious injuries. You can just see them all rolling through the chat right now. And for the Cowboys, they're missing a lot of key players as well. No Nanai, Tamo, Drinkwater, and I feel like I'm, and Ruben Cotter as well. Yeah, so potentially, Taolungi. So, you know, potentially both sides just look at this game and go, look, our attacks weren't that good, but we had so many outs for both of us. It was wet weather. Both sides might just discount this one and just move on as soon as possible. Anything from yourself on this one before we close out the show?
No, I think the Cowboys, the Cowboys of old would have got that win out. But as you say, they have got, the positive is they've got troops coming back. They'll still be very disappointed. Whereas I got the sense, like, yeah, it was a best bet on the Dogs, but I wasn't too confident. It wasn't really our fault. Look, if we lost this game, the Dogs, I wasn't going to say, oh, well, kick out was ruled out. So, like, you can't just make a cop-out of one player ruled out pre-game decides the bet. Like, the Dogs had enough, but it was one player after another. You could kind of see it in the box in Serraldo. I haven't listened to his press conference yet, obviously, because we jumped straight on here. But you could tell they just felt like they were just going to have to scrap and just to go close in this one. Like, it wasn't going to be their day. It wasn't going to be pretty. But they had to just give themselves a hope. And luckily, yeah, it comes down to, you know, one play. Could have gone either way. We'll definitely take it because that's probably our most narrow best bet victory so far this year. I feel like we've already lost a couple by, you know, a point or two here or there. So, feels good. In fact, our best bets are over 60% winners this season.
Feels great. Interesting comment there from Mark. I do see what you mean there, sort of spreading it side to side and playing to the strengths with forwards out, but there's still got to be some shape and structure around that. It's not, you know, sort of just passing from one winger to the other side of the winger like the Bulldogs were, because it's just easy to defend against that at NRL level. You simply count defenders and slide. And in the end, that's what lost the Cowboys the game. I saw three players go back to that short side. I was watching my father-in-law. I said at the time, there's an extra number here for the Bulldogs out on the left. And in the end, it was the very last number, but the extra number was there. And so the point is, 9 times out of 10, you do have to earn the right to go forward, and certainly you have to have shape and structure about that to engage the defenders. Otherwise, it's just too easy to count men and slide there. But that will wrap up a big round 5 recap show. There was a bloody awesome round of footy. I'm absolutely pumped. We appreciate everyone being here and viewing. We certainly appreciate all the live comments that roll through whilst we are here. It's an absolute privilege to be here with you guys every Sunday and, of course, every Wednesday at now 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. Not Eastern Daylight Time anymore, just Eastern time. So, yeah, Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. We hope to see you all back there, and we will preview what shapes to be a big round 6 of the NRL season. Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys. Have a good week and see you Wednesday.